are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 90 of the Geocaching Podcast. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Montu Ryder.
If you want to participate on our show today, please call our phone line, which is 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. You can just click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We also have a voicemail line, which is 206-350-3GPS. And on Twitter, we can be found at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Montu, welcome back. We don't have Daryl tonight. What's going on with you?
Not much. Was planning a day of caching Saturday, but last minute they decided, there's going to be some mandatory training. So I spent all Saturday at the office, and then I was just too pooped to pop on Sunday. So stayed home, and then we had that call Sunday night that we'll be hearing a little bit later on in the podcast. Kind of looking forward to tomorrow. With the forecast we're having, we might actually get something that Florida has not had in about 32 years now. Last time this happened was back in 77. They're predicting possibilities of snow tomorrow. And for Florida, that's saying something. Florida DOT doesn't know what to do with it, and the normal procedure is they shut down the roads and tell everybody to stay off.
Well, that sounds like
how about you, Andy?
It's kind of been bad here too. It's been fairly cold. It's cold. We had negative 15 last week, and it's just been fairly cold ever since then. I mean, it's starting to warm up now where we actually get a chance to, maybe go out caching a little bit, but it's cold enough that you really don't want to be out too much because it's just too cold and you really can't do a whole lot of caching. But, you know, I'm happier now that it's, 20, like Candy said in our chat room, 20 degrees feels warm. And how sad is that? Last week we had negative 20 and that was ridiculously cold. You walk outside and you almost freeze.
Now we got 41 here right now, but I'm hoping the weatherman's actually got a good handle on things. So who knows? Maybe tomorrow I'll have off with a snow day.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice. So, but
I hear we've got a message in our voicemail, Andy.
We do. Why don't we go ahead and play that for everybody?
Hi, my geocaching name is M. 359-9137. I'm here in Southern California. Downloaded a bunch of your podcasts here in the last month. Been listening to them. I'm re-inspired. Haven't found a cache since October of 2007. I just went out and found one today. The Glen Ranch Overlook. It was an easy one to get. Not too many people found it. It's been out for about a year. I'm surprised. Anyways, keep up the good work. Like I said, it got me back into geocaching, and still about halfway through your geocaching series. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you for that voicemail, and glad that you're getting back into caching. If anyone else wants to leave a voicemail on our line, we do have a voicemail line, and that can be found at 206-350-3GPS. We love hearing from everybody. It's cool to hear people around the country and what's going on with them. So we give us a call when we like playing it on the podcast. So 206-350-3GPS. Montu, speaking of things going on, I hear that Garmin released a few new things the last couple of weeks. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
I'd be more than happy to. Yeah, Garmin has put out some updates for their popular eTrex models. The eTrex Legend H and the eTrex Vista H. They're low-cost handheld navigators that include several new features considered vital for today's outdoor adventures. First and foremost, the units include a high-sensitivity high sensitivity GPS receiver, which makes satellite acquisition faster and helps ensure a solid lock, even in dense tree canopies or vertical canyons that hikers, hunters, and geocachers often experience. The eTrex Legend H and Vista H also feature a fast USB interface and 25 megabits of internal memory for loading detailed topo maps from the computer. The Vista H also includes an electronic compass and barometric altimeter as well. The Legend H has a manufacturer's retail price of $149.99, and the Vista H has a retail price of $199.99. For more information, you can visit their website at www.garmin.com. Andy?
Oh, and another thing that they introduced is something that they're calling Basecamp. And it's Garmin's new tool for planning and reviewing all of your outdoor activities. And Basecamp basically brings a whole new set of features to hikers and hunters and geocaching, and basically anyone else who wants to maximize their experience with their Garmin GPS. This new utility lets users view, organize, and transfer their data more quickly and efficiently. Basecamp lets users now view both 24K and 100K topo maps in 2D or 3D renderings. Users are no longer confined with a north-up map, and it can be rotated in any direction, and that will begin in the first quarter of 2009. The utility will ship with the all-new Topo US 24K DVD and the Topo US 100K DVD product. So we're looking forward to seeing that, and that's news this week with Garmin. So what Monty was referring to earlier when we were talking to him about things that he did this weekend, he was referring to an interview that we did on Sunday night, and we interviewed Dan Cole, and he's Dan from Dan and Steph. And the reason that we recorded it is because Dan is actually in Korea right now, and so he can't usually join us Tuesday nights when we do this podcast. So we went ahead and recorded it. So let's go ahead and take a listen to that interview with Dan. Hey, everybody. Tonight on the show, the podcast, we have Dan from Dan and Steph on the call with us. We decided to bring Dan on. We know Dan because he's a friend and fan of the podcast, and we know him because of that. And through Twitter, we've got to know him a little bit more through the Twitter and his experiences that he's had recently. And it's a little bit it's interesting. And so we thought we'd talk with him tonight and just find out a little bit more about caching in a new country, you know, moving to a country where you're not familiar with it and caching. So Dan, welcome to the podcast tonight. It's good to have you on.
Hey, thanks. Good afternoon, everybody.
I guess I should say that we're actually not recording this live because Dan can't normally join us when we do our Tuesday night recording. So we're actually recording Sunday night, which is Monday for him. So for him, he's in the middle of the day and you know, we're sitting here at night, but he's on Monday. So, how's Monday?
It's pretty good. It's nice having a day off finally where I can do something like this.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Well, Dan, last time we talked with you and your wife was back on Cachemaniacs episode 86. And you guys were just getting ready to move over to Korea. That sounded from the tweets to be kind of a rough process, but finally everything's over there and you're settled in. How's that going?
Pretty good. You know, it's kind of difficult moving something like this because we can't take all of our household goods. So we put probably 2/3 of our household items into storage, and I won't get to lay eyes on that until probably the end of 2011. So then we had to separate what we wanted to bring with us, and then had to separate out of that what we needed as soon as we got there. So getting ready for that moving process was pretty difficult, but everything has arrived now in mostly reasonably good shape. I still have to file a claim for some stuff that was damaged. That's to be expected anytime you're moving, let alone moving overseas at the government's expense.
Yeah, it's not an easy process. I can't even fathom how tough that must have been, especially for the young girls.
Yeah, and the family is all here now. They've been here for 19 days, so we're settling in nicely so far.
Yeah, I know that's I was just going to say, that's been one of the things that I saw was really actually cool about Twitter. And for those of you who don't like Twitter, this is one of the reasons I say is Twitter is cool because we got to see a little glimpse of Dan and his family through Twitter. He kept counting down the days how before his family got to come over, and it was cool to see that and see the excitement building, and I almost felt like I was cheering him on, that they were going to be there soon.
I left right before Thanksgiving, so I missed Thanksgiving and I missed Christmas and then New Year's Eve, but they got here on New Year's Day, so it was a good way to bring in the new year.
Yeah, so you had quite a long time that you had no one there with you. You spent some time caching during that period, as I recall. Can you talk a little bit about what those first caches were like?
Yeah, and it's been discussed on a couple other shows. Anytime you're traveling to a new place or a new area, to look up and see what geocaches are there, because oftentimes the geocaches are hidden by people who live in that area. So that's what I did. I looked up a couple of the geocaches, and I found a geocaching name that looked like it was somebody American, and sure enough, it was a guy by the name of New Yorker, and he's not in the military. He's one of the DA civilians or a contractor, and so he's traveled many different places as well, and he's been living here for quite a while and is married to a Korean national. So he was very familiar with the area, and I sent him a couple emails, and I was hoping to make it here for my first geocache to be an event called Colorful Daegu. And Daegu is the town that I live in right now. And I got to Seoul, Korea, and then got hung up in the in-processing phase. It's kind of a long process, and it got even longer because they got my orders mixed up and had me moving all over Korea. So I didn't make it for the event, but he still wanted to take me out and take me geocaching and start showing me the area. And it worked out great. And the very first geocache that I found was one right out in front of his apartment building.
Oh, it's too bad you didn't make the event, because I know events are great ways to meet new people, and especially with you going to a totally different country, would have been a great way to meet a lot of the caches there in the area. So could you tell us a little bit more about that first caching experience? What were the, what's the difference roughly between a Korean cache and a U.S. cache? Is there really much difference between the two?
Actually, there is. There's not that many geocachers in South Korea, despite there being millions and millions of people who live here. It's a very heavily populated area. The city I live in right now is about 2.5 million people, and it's one of the smaller towns. Up in Seoul, Korea, just in the city itself is 23.5 million people, and there's probably less than 100 people who geocache there. So there's not many people, so they don't have a whole lot of influence on how they place their caches and everything. So they all kind of hide them the same way. Not to mention, since it is so heavily populated, most of the geocaches are urban caches. There's not a whole lot of hikes out in the woods because there's just not any woods to go hiking in.
Now, do you know the Korean language?
I do not.
So
that's one of the other challenges.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you that. Now, are you finding that most of the pages are written in Korean, or are you finding that they're the English pages, or what? How do you find that?
Well, geocaching.com doesn't really support the Hangul characters, the Korean characters, very well. So a lot of the geocachers here, they'll type up their pages in Hangul and whatever they do, and then go to something like Google Translator, and then get that translation of what they want to say, and then use that on the geocaching page.
So in English, it doesn't really make much sense then, right? Because I know that whenever I've used the translation services, it usually comes up pretty funny.
Yeah, that's the hard thing. When you're looking for a geocache and you can't find it, and you say, okay, well, I give up, I'm going to use the hint, and the hint doesn't help either. So really, it's very difficult. Fortunately, a lot of the geocachers here are more affluent because the handheld GPSs are a little more expensive. Everybody has the dashboard navigational type units. it's kind of funny to see a car with a bumper hanging off, but it's got a 7-inch touchscreen display navigation GPS stuck to the windshield. But not many people have GPS units, and the ones that actually geocache mostly use the Oregons because that's what's most available here, but they're twice as expensive here than they are in the States. So some of the geocachers do speak English, but still the cache pages are a disaster.
So you think it's mostly the expense that's the barrier to entry, or is it maybe the language barrier, since geocaching.com doesn't support the native language?
I think it's the cost of the units. Because the people who do geocache, they are big-time geocachers. They love doing it. So they'll figure it out one way or another. It's just getting started into the sport that's difficult.
Now,
well, and how many geocachers have you actually run into over there? Are they mostly American contractors and servicemen, or is it a balanced mix, or what?
Well, the only person that I've met is that guy, New Yorker, that I mentioned before. But there has been a couple others that have typed up logs on the geocachers that I've placed out here, but I haven't actually got to meet him yet. On the 29th here, we're going to be hosting an event, a meet and greet type event, and we're still trying to come up with a good name. It's not really a cacher's coffee. We're thinking maybe cacher's kimchi instead, but we'll see how that goes. But then I'll get to meet quite a few more people, hopefully.
So, Dan, I noticed when we first started, or when you first got over there, you posted on Twitter a picture of your local area and where you were located at versus where the caches were around you. And there wasn't a whole lot of caches near you. So did you find that when you first got there, like, it was a good thing that they were far enough away because it got you a chance to go out further and discover the area, and also you get a chance to place a lot of caches. So did you find that, or was that a hindrance that they weren't so close?
Well, the area that you're talking about is right where I work, actually, in Waegon, Korea. And I was staying at a hotel there, so I didn't have a whole lot to do in that area, regardless whether it was geocaching or not. And I didn't have any transportation because I didn't ship a car over here. But I found it was pretty good because I got to go out and explore. I did a lot of exploring on Google Earth first and tried to figure out if there were some hiking trails around here, because I know hiking is very popular on the very few hills and mountains that there are. Well, there's a lot of hills and mountains, but they're not real easy to get to. A lot of the trails just kind of start in somebody's backyard, and you're never sure if should I be traipsing through this guy's little garden, or should I just keep on going, or what? But I did some exploring, plotted the grid coordinates for what I thought might be a trailhead on my GPS, and just went out and did a lot of walking. The first couple days that I was here, it was not uncommon for me to walk 8 or 10 miles a day just from place to place. And I could have taken a taxi or taken a bus or whatever, but I wanted to get out there and spend some time discovering the area for myself so I can learn where I'm going a little better.
Now that your family's over there, how much caching have you been able to get in as a family?
Well, so far we haven't done any. It's kind of getting adjusted to new germs and new temperature and everything, so everybody's been kind of sick, and I'm still fighting a cold, and we were at the doctor yesterday trying to get some cold medicine, but on the 29th, like I said, there's an event, and we're looking forward to doing that, and hopefully getting some weather that's warm enough to get out and do some exploring.
Well, getting back to the caches that you placed, what kind of caches did you place, and how have those been found and received?
They were Tupperware containers hidden in the woods. Ammo cans are a bit of a, there's none out here. The only ammo cans are used by the military, and the military doesn't want to let those go into the Korean population. So they're not as easy to come by here. But Tupperware and actually lock and lock containers, I've never used one before, but after I started shopping in the local markets, I found that those things are everywhere. They've got every different size and shape, and they've got glass containers and everything. So that's a really popular type of container. And what I did was up there in my area where I was working and staying in the hotel, you know, I went up the hill and just went for a nice long hike and shot a couple grid coordinates along the way. And when I finally decided where I'd like to hide them, I went back and dropped the containers. It's a pretty intense hike. A lot of them here, because they just go, the hills just go straight up the side of the mountains, and they're well maintained trails because a lot of the community likes to get out and, you know, spend some time hiking around, getting exercise that way. And what I found was that people who lived here said that as the communities developed, they kind of pushed people out of the little communities and built high-rise apartments so that they could provide housing for more people in the smaller area. Well, then the prices for the apartments were so expensive that the people who were promised an opportunity to move back in weren't allowed to. So with all the communities developing and people getting pushed out, they really, the city decided they needed to do something for these people who've been kind of displaced. And so they've built workout equipment on the ridgelines of these mountains. And so even though you're hiking way up in the middle of nowhere where you'd think you wouldn't see anybody, you see a lot of people, and not just young people. It's a lot of older people, people who are long past retirement age even.
I can definitely see where the lack of ammo cans, though, would definitely help reduce the number of bomb scares.
Absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to bomb scares and stuff like that, you know, it's really impossible for me to blend in with the general populace. Not just because I'm doing a drunken bee dance in a public area, but because I'm an American. And there's really not that many Americans here. So I'm looking forward to having my family here now to get out there and use them as muggle distraction technique, because all the people just tend to flock to my kids because they're both blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and cute as a button.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to get out caching with the family fairly soon. But I think you had said earlier that most of those finds already there were more urban hides. Are those micros then, or are they the small lock and locks?
Most of them are micros or nanos even. And one of the things that's difficult is that here steel is a very precious commodity. So a lot of the structures and stuff that you'll see are aluminum. So they can't even be magnetic micros. So they kind of get pretty creative with how they hide things. And they'll look for anything that might be magnetic to stick something to. So, and a lot of the others are like pill bottles, kind of buried between some rocks or something. So, with there being so few places to hide things, it's kind of easy to figure out, okay, well, this is how I found this guy's caches before, and they're all the same types of hides. So you generally know what to look for. But you know, the hard part is the muggle deception and trying not to stick out too much.
Now, speaking of placing caches, as you said, you had placed a few caches. I know that you're also working on a Where I Go cartridge and cache. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? I know you've called into the show a couple times and have told us your frustrations with that. Go ahead. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. One of my favorite TV shows, and I'm sure I know there's a lot of people who on Twitter agree, Chuck on NBC is an awesome kind of tech geek type show. And unfortunately, I don't get NBC here in Korea, so I have to be a little more creative in how I get to view the show as new episodes become available. But that's the theme for my geocache. And I have borrowed some of the characters, and I've done some artwork on it, and created a storyline. And I've plotted out a couple zones where I can use here. There's a river that runs right through the middle of the city. And there's a riverwalk area. It varies in width where the park is, like a green belt type area next to the river. So I've kind of placed a couple of zones in some of the wider areas where you can actually have a zone and not accidentally stumble into it as you're going through. But the hard thing is the language barrier, because I've got the storyline, and I think it's a great storyline. But it might be not received as well, just because of the language barrier. But what Daryl's mentioned to me is finding some other people in the other areas that will be able to host. And so I'll be able to have somebody else plant out some zones and then lay my where I go on top of their area and have them host it and have an actual geocache at the end so people can get that where I go icon on their geocaching profile. But I am still working on it. I haven't made a whole lot of progress. Actually, I haven't made any progress since my family's been here. But eventually I'll get back to it and finish it up.
Yeah, it sounds like that's a ton of work to get that cartridge going because you're doing such a cool job with it. But are there any other where I go caches right now? I know with the Oregon being the dominant unit, you'll certainly have a number of people going for it. But is there a sense of other where I goes and what the adoption is like?
Well, you know, it's really surprised me. I know there's a lot of Oregon units here, but the only other where I go that I'm aware of is up in Seoul. And it's a very simple, like walking tour type where I go. And it's not an actual where I go cache. It's just a cartridge. So there's really nothing to find at the end. It's just seeing, okay, I can do this cool thing with my GPS device, but that's about it. So I'm looking to have something with a geocache at the end and hopefully make it a more popular type of geocache here.
Yeah, with that barrier for all the work that you have to put into it, it's tough to get those things out and people to really do them because they're a lot more work all the way around.
Absolutely. It's not like just even doing a multi-cache or a puzzle cache where you have to have the puzzle and then mark out all the waypoints. It's, you know, for each zone, you've got to have a couple points just to create the area. And then you got to multiply that out into how many times you're using a different zone and then the characters and how to interact with the characters. And the builder is not too easy to work with. I mean, it has to be that way because there's so many different things you can do. So they have to do something, but it just takes a lot of practice and trial and error to work with it. And the unit I'm using is a cell phone that I had while I was in the States. It's the HTC 8925, also known as the AT&T Tilt. And it runs a Windows Mobile 6.1 and it has a GPS cell chip built into it. And it works great. The problem is here, it uses a different kind of cell phone network, so I can't use it as a cell phone. Now it's just a PDA with a GPS device built in. And it's got Wi-Fi, so I use it as a Wi-Fi device at home and whenever I'm shopping in different areas and have open Wi-Fi available. But I can't really make phone calls on it. Actually, I can run Skype on it, but Skype phone calls over open Wi-Fi are usually pretty low quality, so I don't do that too much.
Yeah, well, it's a nice device from what I've been told, and really Windows Mobile seems to be the way to go for the where I go cartridges because it does have that audio support.
Yeah, I haven't got to the point where I can test it on the device yet, so I'm looking forward to reaching that stage at least.
Now, Dan, getting back to the more traditional hides, can you talk a little bit about the different kinds of caches there? You said there are a little bit different creative hides. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, one of the most unusual caches that I've found since I've been here is what they've called structure caches. And they're geocaches that are not hidden along ground floor or even slapped up against the side of a building or a signpost. They're actually on top of buildings or at some level on a building. With there being so many high-rise buildings, the people here have built like gardens and outlooks on top of the buildings. For instance, there's a department store here in town, and the store is 12 floors of clothes and groceries and anything that you can think of. But then at the very top, you walk through a couple restaurants and then up another set of escalators, and you're on the very top of this building. And they've got a garden with trees and sculptures and benches and walking paths and everything on top of a 12-story building. So I've been up there and I previewed it during the Christmas season, but there were so many people out there I didn't even dare to try and find a geocache. But from what I can tell, it looks like it's a magnetic container hidden somewhere on a sculpture. So I'm looking forward to getting back there. And then also when I went to pick up my family at Incheon Airport, there was an apartment building, and the description says just walk right in the lobby, take the elevator up to the ninth floor, walk across the hall, go through the doorway, and you're up on the roof. And sure enough, you know, it felt a little strange just walking into this apartment building and taking the escalator or the elevator up to the very top. But nobody asked me any questions. Nobody did anything. And sure enough, I got to find the cache and had an outstanding overlook over the entire airport. And the airport in Incheon, you ought to go look it up on Google Earth and see what it's like, because there's one bridge that's 16 lanes wide that goes over the bay onto an island. And the island is only for the airport. So they've got businesses and hotels and everything just for the airport. So being able to go up on top of this building and take pictures of everything was really a unique experience. It was very windy and very cold. I think it was 10 degrees with a heavy wind. So I don't know how cold the wind chill was, but I didn't want to stay up there too long. But the structure caches are very cool, something special to Korea.
Well, that sounds like a really, really cool kind of cache, but I don't think we could probably get those approved over here. What's the review process like over in Korea? Is it any different than what you experienced in the U.S.?
You know, it is different from the U.S., just in that the reviewers in the U.S., they all have their own little area, whereas here, there's a handful of reviewers that cover all of Asia. So I've got a couple geocaches hidden still in Iraq, in Southwest Asia. And it was the same reviewer that approved this one here in Northeast Asia, which is still thousands of miles away, but it's the same guy. And they know pretty well what to look for, whether or not you have to have special credentials to access certain areas or anything. So, the reviewers are very good with working with people, and I don't know if English is their native language or not, but they've all been pretty helpful if I have any questions.
Well, it does seem like a great way to cover it. So they probably have a number of different reviewers that have maybe some different language specialties then.
I would think so, because it, you know, Korean is a very difficult language to learn, and you know, I have a little cheat sheet card that I keep with me, but you know, I'm sure they've got something special where they can handle all the different languages throughout Asia and the different areas that they cover.
Well, Dan, I want to thank you for being on our show tonight and taking time out of your Monday, because you know, it's your day off, like you said, and I'm sure that you've got your family to spend time with, especially a lot of catching up to do after they've been separated from them for so long. And we just want to thank you for taking your time out and joining us on the show tonight. And we hope you have a lot of fun, and you know, maybe we'll catch back up with you here in a few months and see if your area is more populated with caches and what's going on with you then.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity to do the live call since I don't get to anymore since I'm here.
Yeah, it's been we miss you being on the live call, and glad that we could actually do this catch up. Well, we want to thank Dan for being on the show. Like I said tonight, I'd love to have you guys open up the mic and interview, you know, ask questions for Dan. We had a few good questions in the chat room as we were doing this interview. However, he's at work now on a Wednesday morning, so we you know, he's a day later, so we actually can't have him on the show today. So that was a lot of fun to do that interview, and it's cool to see the differences that he had. I mean, I picked up like the structure caches I thought were really cool, and Montu, did you learn a lot from that? I mean, I found that I learned a lot, and it was cool to see what he was doing with the caching.
Well, one thing I'd be disappointed with over there is the no ammo cans. I know that's one thing I always look forward to when I go out, especially out in the woods caching, is finding the ammo cans, knowing that I'm looking for something that I'm going to recognize.
Yeah, but you
right
know,
off the bat,
it is fun to get a different container that you're not normally used to too. So like you said, you know, coming across the lock and locks and the different kinds of stuff like that. So yeah, that was definitely, it was a good interview. And we want to thank Dan again for being on the show tonight, Sunday night, but join us every Tuesday night at 9:30 PM Eastern time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 75 1-800-825. Normally we have it a little bit more open. People can ask questions and stuff like that. But you know, we since it's with the recorded one, we didn't do that tonight. And Geek Boy from Illinois also did say that, you know, a good thing would be to send some tweets to Dan, and he can be found at Jeepin_Idaho on Twitter, and that'll be we'll have that link in our show notes. And also you can send in some of voicemail for some responses too, which can be found. Our voicemail number can be found at 206-350-3GPS. And our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. Thanks, everybody. Have a good week and keep on caching.